On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Hello and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. It is the summer, but still a lot going on in the college athletic hemisphere. You've got basketball, summer workouts starting, baseball still going, obviously, out in Omaha. You've got some big coaching moves going on in Starkville, Mississippi, and now in Charlottesville, Virginia. But also, the house settlement, the thing that everyone's been waiting months for, finally was signed and approved a couple weeks ago. And we've got the great David Teal from the Daily Press joining us today to dive into just kind of what this all means for this new era of college athletics. David, thanks for joining.
Sure, Preston. Happy to be here. And you mentioned the house settlement finally being approved a couple of weeks ago at 9 o'clock on a Friday night. I mean, come on, we're all several hours into happy hour.
That's
bless her heart, Judge Wilkin, who's out there in Oakland. She does not play by East Coast rules.
That's taking the Friday news dump to a new extreme.
Yes.
I was just driving back from the beach and we literally pulled in the driveway. I get into and I see, I can't remember who tweeted it, but just saw that and I was like, really, at this time of night? But here we are.
Yeah, I saw an interview with Charlie Baker, the NCAA president. He was in a wedding.
Oh my goodness.
And he said his phone just started blowing up. He said, fortunately, he was at a wedding with a lot of other NCAA people. So apparently everybody just crowded around the phone and nobody felt guilty.
I'm sure everyone's phones started going off at the same time. David, let's kind of start off by going into the basics, because we've kind of talked about this for a few months now, because we've kind of been waiting for it. We went through the football transfer portal period, kind of waiting for it. Then we went through basketball and, we're just starting to dip into baseball. And now we finally have this. But kind of the basics, obviously, revenue sharing begins. I think that's the headline of all this is, salary cap at $20.5 million for the first year, and then it increases in value, I believe, by 4% each year over the next decade, as long as this deal goes on. Obviously, yep. This establishes NIL Go and, kind of the policing of NIL deals now over $600, the roster limits, the College Sports Commission. You take wherever you want to start with it, yeah. And we'll go from there.
Well, there's so many layers here, Preston, as you alluded to. And the first part of it is back damages. $2.8 billion over 10 years to the plaintiffs in this case, former college athletes who sued the Power Five conferences and the NCAA over antitrust issues and lost NIL opportunities. So that's part of it. And the schools are helping to pay that freight. It'll probably cost ACC schools such as UVA a little over $1 million a year over the next decade. And as schools scramble to fund other portions of the house settlement, which we'll talk about in a minute, $1 million is no longer chump change. That's another expense, or that's $1 million less in revenue they'll get from the ACC. Then you have what you mentioned, the revenue share, $20.5 million cap that will be monitored by a group, by software that Major League Baseball uses to keep an eye on teams and their cap habits. So that's one part of it. And then endorsement deals, so-called real NIL, that's on top of the salary cap, in addition to all the money that the athletes will get in rev share. The rev share If you talk to ADs around the country, especially the ACC, will probably be distributed on a revenue basis, i.e., football generates the most revenue. So football is probably going to get about 75% at most schools of that 20.5 million. Men's basketball, about 15%. Women's basketball, about 5%. 5% for everyone else. Now, then you get into the scholarship, the additional scholarships with the roster caps. I think that's going to be more of a Title IX issue. And there will be far more equity into how those additional scholarships are divvied up. I would imagine probably like at UVA or Virginia Tech, you're probably talking about 50 new scholarships. And I would imagine there'd be 20 to 25 on each side of the house, gender-wise. And then you mentioned the College Sports Commission. And as everyone said, Jim Phillips and the Power Commissioners had a Zoom with us after the settlement. And they all conceded none of this works if they can't enforce it. And that's what Brian Seely, who comes over from Major League Baseball, he investigated the Astros and the Red Sox for sign stealing. More currently, he investigated Shohei's interpreter, who apparently, I think he's starting his prison sentence today for ripping off Shohei. So if Brian Seely thinks that Major League Baseball is rife with cheating and chicanery, wait till he gets a load of college athletics. And it's going to be his group's responsibility to enforce the real NIL and make sure that these deals are, number one, reported and that the clearinghouse's decisions are adhered to. And I know that's a long-winded answer, but this is all very much multifaceted, complex stuff.
It seems like for the past how many ever years, we've had a new era of college sports start every couple months. But this feels like a very definitive line of, all right, things are very different how they start now. And I want to stop there on the College Sports Commission part of this because the policing this is going to be so interesting. Because what have we learned about college athletics over decades now? Where there are shady people in college athletics, they will find a way to do something. And so, how policeable do you think this will be?
Well, Preston, my understanding is, and I am not a legal scholar by any stretch, but that with the arbitration that will come with appeals of clearinghouse decisions, there's limited subpoena power, which the NCAA never had, and really hamstrung its enforcement efforts. Now, will that help the new entity? One would think. But we have to believe, common sense and history tell us that the minute some athlete has a big NIL deal rejected, he's calling his lawyer and somebody's going to court. Preston, we've already had Title IX based challenges about the back damages. From a group that includes a current UVA volleyball player. So it's already started. And that's why so many people in the industry, especially the commissioners and the athletic directors, are groveling before Congress, asking for some form of protection, antitrust wise, that would essentially codify this settlement and supersede any state laws that attempt to circumvent NCAA regs. Can Congress fit that into its agenda? Call me skeptical. Imagine that. But that's what they hope for.
It's really interesting because I think SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey is the one that said, you know, these schools want to be, they want to have rules in place. And then you mentioned, you know, state laws. Well, Tennessee, like the next day, is, you know, already kind of pushing back on some stuff. I think Tennessee's been one of the ones throughout that has always been kind of,
Oh, yeah.
pushing back on a lot of this. And you mentioned the lawsuit from, that group of athletes, female athletes. That's going to be interesting because that was only a couple days after this. As much as they kind of paraded this as like, all right, this is gonna like no schools are gonna have the ability to kind of like fight back and sue in this. Well, there's other entities outside those schools, and it's already
Correct.
making this interesting.
Right. Because the schools are they are going to sign contracts, agreements that say we will not challenge this legally and we will adhere to this. Okay, again, skeptical, but let's say that you do. But then when one of your donors, one of your fans, tries to short circuit all this and circumvent, then you just throw up your hands and say, didn't know about that, unaware, sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, that's what makes this all interesting, and it's why it's like there's never it's never so simple on a layer for college athletics, and that's just kind of where it is. Going back to the revenue sharing now, you kind of mentioned that model that a lot of schools are going to adhere by the 75% for football, 15% for men's basketball, 5% women's basketball, 5% the other sports. Do you see that going off in any other direction for some schools that may value something else a little differently, some sports a little differently?
Well, certainly, I mean, it's been theorized that, say, the non-football schools in the Big East, especially. Now, granted, they don't have the revenue streams that the football schools do from ESPN and Fox. So that's one part of it. But without football, they are free to devote whatever portion of that 20.5 they're able to come up with. Like Marquette is not going to share 20.5 million with his athletes, but whatever that school, such as Marquette, Georgetown, decide to share with their athletes, you can bet a lion's share is going to men's basketball. So that will be interesting. And might among the power conference schools, the percentages skew a little differently by a point or two. Sure. Alabama, Clemson, they're all in on football. Schools such as Duke, even UVA, I mean, where men's basketball is exceedingly important and part of the cultural fabric of not only the athletic department, but the entire institution.
Yeah, and I also wonder, you just saw Mississippi State and the amount of resources they put towards baseball. Baseball is not a revenue sport in large part, but do schools like that that are going all in, like a Mississippi State, even a Vanderbilt, back in their day, all right, we can't really compete in the football and basketball realms as much, but maybe baseball we have a little bit of an advantage here.
Yeah, I think you could see something like that. And then, Preston, you saw today where maybe it was late last night where UVA announced a $5.5 million gift from the Smith family, much of that earmarked for Chris Pollard's baseball program in the form of not only operating expenses, but also scholarships. So this again speaks to Carla Williams and the athletic department's endeavors to essentially get all these Olympic sports fully endowed. So all the other operating expenses, football and men's basketball, they can be paid for by the TV contracts and such.
Yeah.
That's the fascinating component. Men's tennis with Andreas Pedroso was the first step in that. And clearly the Cavaliers want to take that even further.
Yeah, that is the men's tennis was the example that she put out in her statement when she released that. And now baseball seems like they're getting that. And I think some of that was also to, I think, five different women's sports as well. So,
Exactly.
yeah, and that's part of this part of the strategy is trying to find these other revenue streams to kind of take care of some of the non-revenue sports. So all that money that you're bringing in with revenue sharing can go to those major sports. The scholarship element of this is interesting as well. The roster limits and everything. Football's at 105, men's basketball is up to 15. Baseball's up to 34. And there's a lot of every sport has changed at least a little bit outside of women's basketball. I think that's the only one that stayed the same. And that was kind of the big sticking point as far as what I understand from, the Judge Claudia Wilkin about, the grandfathering in system, if you want to talk a little bit on that.
Because essentially schools had to cut athletes, or they thought they did, if these roster limits were all of a sudden hard and fast in place starting July 1. And what Judge Wilkin asked for and what the parties agreed to was that athletes who had been promised a spot or had signed a grant in aid would be grandfathered into that. And it's up to the schools to, kind of be honest about that. And now some athletes who were told that they were cut, they're already gone. They've either hit the portal or just simply transferred and decided not to compete. So it's too late for them. But it'll be, the number you hear floating around is Virginia's going to go to 25 baseball scholarships. And that's more than double what the Cavaliers were funding previously. That's a big financial commitment, and I'm sure speaks to why Chris Pollard was drawn to the job.
And there's also the Access UVA money that they've used in the past to kind of go above that 11.7 scholarships they had. But yeah, 25 has been kind of that sweet spot for Virginia. And it's not 34, but I think it sometimes you've got to like, is was there enough of a need for 34 full baseball scholarships? It's you get into a whole other conversation with the salary that Brian O'Connor's now making down at Mississippi State. Just about resources and everything. I did want to touch on too with the scholarships. It'll be interesting to see how much is allocated for each sport. I mean, right now, I mean, we talk about men's basketball, but they're set to only have 13 players on this roster theoretically. Still waiting on one more. But between 12 and 13, with the goes up to 15. So do you see maybe some sports taking a little bit less here and there, just like, yeah, this is maybe as much as we need?
Rosters and locker rooms can get too big. And when they get too big, then you have playing time issues. And, then all of a sudden the transfer rates go up even higher and there's more chaos. I think what's going to be interesting, Preston, is schools are signing contracts with athletes. And I think in some cases, as we move forward, those will be multi-year and there will be buyouts and there will be, retention bonuses, and much like you see with coaches. So maybe we can only hope that will ease the annual flood into the portal.
I think that's what people are hoping for, at least.
Oh,
I mean,
100%.
and those buyouts, does that part of the salary cap?
Well, the buyout, if the athlete pays it back, can you then reinvest? I don't believe so. There's an FAQ, and I haven't read the entire thing on the College Sports Commission website. And I would the website is very user-friendly. I would encourage your viewers and listeners to go there. I think it's just collegesportscommission.org. And they've done a really nice job with it.
Yeah, I was on there. I think this morning, just getting ready for this, kind of poking around and seeing. But yeah, you're right. It's a good resources. That's, I mean, right now, like, you're trying to find those resources to get a better understanding of this, because like it is completely just different from what we're so used to in college sports. I guess and we can touch a little bit more on collectives now, because we've already heard from Cav Futures, the UVA collective, that they're kind of shifting more into more of a marketing wing now, reaching out to these businesses, and they're not, going out to donors and trying to bring in money for NIL in that old traditional sense, but more in that marketing sense now. And I think there's a lot of talk about, well, some collectives will go away, others will kind of repurpose themselves. What's the future of NIL now?
I think some schools probably will bring it completely in-house.
Yeah.
I think some you'll see their multimedia partners, such as Playfly and Learfield. You'll see them get involved in these efforts. There are a lot of different ways to go about this. You still hear rumblings of private equity getting involved in college athletics, which opens up a completely different can of worms. Because when you get private equity, they want return on investment, and they usually want it pretty darn rapidly. When you accept that money, I think you essentially cede some control of your athletic department. Will schools be so desperate that they take that route? I don't know.
And we saw Kentucky with the whole LLC thing. Like,
LLC,
is
yep.
that what, how does that, I guess I'm still reading a little bit more on that, but how does that kind of, stick them out from the rest of the competition?
Well, it is different. And I think other schools will kind of sit back and see, is it working for them? Because, I
Y'all
mean,
be the guinea pigs.
exactly. And then if it fails, well, we don't want to do that. And then if it works, oh,
Yeah.
no, exactly. Guinea pig is the exact right description.
Well, let's take a quick break here. We kind of got through the basics of this whole house settlement and everything that's coming on with that. And then let's get in kind of more into UVA coming up here after the break on the Who's On podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I'm still joined by David Teal from the Daily Press. We're going to dive a little bit more into UVA and the house settlement in this kind of new world. We finally heard from Carla Williams on this. She's talked a little bit at Brian Odom's introductory press conference on this topic, but she released her full statement last week. And obviously, confirming what a lot of us had already heard is, the UVA will have the full 20.5 million this first year. We'll see, as this goes up, and schools are having to find that number year after year if that changes. But for right now, that's the word. Four key areas she laid out: revenue sharing, scholarships, commercial NIL operations. That's where your athletic budget is kind of going these days. And one quote I kind of picked out, because I think it kind of sums everything up you need to know about this, is revenue sharing for revenue producing sports will fuel the viability and success of athletic departments going forward. That's what we talked about with this percentage of the pie of this revenue sharing. What did you make of just her statement and kind of reading through what she had to say?
Well, I think it echoed things she has said before. And one thing that she mentioned to us at Coach Odom's introduction is that if the house settlement is enforced properly and effectively, that it's good for schools such as UVA and others who like to adhere to rules and aren't always looking to dodge and circumvent and duck and find their way around them. And is it going to be a level playing field? No, it never has been and never will be. But could there be at least some leveling of said field? I think that's what Virginia and like-minded schools are hoping for. And I think she's right. If this is done effectively, schools such as UVA will be the beneficiary.
Yeah, and I was wondering about that level playing field because that is something that she's mentioned before. How much of a level playing field will it be when you're talking about, the TV contracts of the SEC and kind of where college athletics has been? We look at the gap in football and to basketball this year and even down to baseball because that's top of mind because it's recency, and even women's basketball too. Like, how much of a level playing field can it be with these new rules?
I think it, like we've mentioned, it'll never be completely level. And the disparate television revenue is part of it. And Preston, if you want to look at what revenue can get you, Mississippi State essentially doubled Brian O'Connor's salary. Michigan State essentially doubled Charlottesville native Jay Batts' salary to hire him as an athletic director from Georgia Tech. There's two people, Oak and Jay Batt, who were roundly respected in the ACC. And they've gone off to the SEC and the Big Ten, respectively. Not to say that their salary was the deciding factor, but was it part of it? I can't imagine it wasn't. If somebody offered to double my salary, would I take a look? Yeah.
Yeah, I would consider moving to Mississippi if I was getting double the salary as well. Yeah, it's interesting just kind of how much of this will kind of level out. And maybe you're right, and maybe it's those positions, outside of just players. Maybe it's the head coaches. You're getting some of the best cream of the crop talent and coaches and athletic directors and other personnel you can bring into your program. And you look at the support staff. We've talked about that for years now. It's the amount of support staff that SEC schools bring in. They have positions I've never even heard of because I've strictly cover an ACC school.
Oh, yeah, no, and it's unlimited. And now coaching staffs are essentially
Yeah.
that way too. So that is one way that those schools do have an advantage.
Where do you kind of see, as we start this new era, where do you see a school like Virginia? I guess overall athletics, but maybe after that we can dive into maybe more specifically football and men's basketball.
Well, I mean, Virginia's athletic department as a whole continues to thrive. I mean, from all measures, it looks like the Cavaliers will again be in the top 25 of the Director's Cup all sports standings. You've got a fifth consecutive women's swimming natty, few putts, and the men's golf team might have won the national championship as well, coming on the heels of its first ACC title in program history. So, overall, the program continues to be competitive on a national basis. But its marquee sports, clearly and in great contrast, are struggling. And when those programs struggle simultaneously, that is difficult and that presents challenges. And that's what Chris Pollard and Ryan Odom and Tony Elliott need to fix in a hurry.
And that's, I mean, that's where you get into this conversation where
And, oh,
everyone,
and Coach Mox.
I was going to mention too, Coach Mox, just this probably was one of the worst athletic years for Virginia. And they'll still have a decent finish in the Director's Cup overall. And they had the women's swimming title and, a couple other sports really performed well. But when you look at the big marquee sports, and that's all that anyone wants to look at the end of the year, football, no bowl game again, men's basketball, no NCAA tournament, women's basketball, no NCAA tournament, and baseball, no NCAA tournament, even men's lacrosse, no
That's
NCAA
lacrosse.
tournament.
Yeah.
It's so, zero postseason appearances among all those sports. And then it's an interesting time because now you transition into this where you're asking more from fans and donors than ever before. It's just
Correct.
a very interesting timing on all accounts.
Right. And at what point, and this is not unique to Virginia by any stretch. When a school is struggling in those marquee programs, When does donor fatigue set in? When they say, why am I giving you this money when we're not producing? At what point do they just tap out and say, no, I'm just setting a match to this cash and it's going in the ashes. So I don't think anyone doubts that Lars Tiffany and Chris Pollard, in very short order, will have Virginia lacrosse and baseball back in postseason. And probably Ryan Odom as well, given the recruiting that he's done and we all envision that he will do in the future. The big question is football.
And football is very interesting because, obviously the amount of resources that they got this offseason to go into the transfer portal and make all, the big additions that they did. And, everyone will mention the top 25 recruiting class in the portal, and just the kind of change over the roster that they did. I can't imagine there's a bigger, spotlight on any program in UVA in quite some time than football, what's coming up in this next season, because of the amount of pressure, not just on Tony Elliott because he hasn't gotten to a bowl game yet, but because a lot of the athletics department seems like it's riding on, all right, football, please go out there and do something.
Yes. No, you're 100% right. And it's just that's how big college football has become in the industry. It drives so much of the economics. And if you are in a extended decline, which by any measure UVA is, it creates urgency that you just don't find anywhere else from any other sport.
And I remain bullish on what they can do this season. I think the schedule sets up pretty nicely, although, you can't base everything off last season with how much rosters have changed over. But I remain pretty bullish because I like the pieces they brought in. It's just, can they go out there and get the results? I mean, how do you feel right now about this team at where they're going next year?
Well, history tells us to be skeptical. And the schedule is manageable, but they've had manageable schedules before, and it hasn't gone down well. So you need to see it on the field. You need to see it, especially in the secondary. You need to see it on the offensive line. You need to see it at running back. It will be fascinating. You mentioned you can't base everything off last year because of so much roster overturn, and I think we've mentioned this before. But Virginia is the only Power Four team this upcoming season that will not play an opponent that finished 2024 in the top 25.
Yeah, I think they had the number one easiest schedule according to FPI from ESPN. So it sets up pretty well for them. But that's if results don't go well, that's all the more reason to get a little worried in Charlottesville. But I think things could go well. I guess just looking overall, and maybe at men's basketball now that we're kind of talking about that, you wrote extensively about this, the season tickets and everything going on with that, as kind of another source for this whole revenue sharing. It's been some very mixed opinions and feedback from that. Just what do you think overall of the strategy, just kind of with the season tickets and the big ask, I guess they're asking of people right now?
It is a big ask. And the folks at the Virginia Athletics Foundation, led by Kevin Miller, they concede as much. But as he told me when we talked about this and when they unveiled it all, is really it shouldn't have come as a surprise because when they opened JPJ, this is what they did. They sold seat licenses. Now, were they as pricey as they are now? Clearly not. But the concept, the model was in place, and it was for X number of years. And now those years are set to expire. Now there's two more seasons. There's plenty of ramp time here. So it's not like all of a sudden they're springing this on people. And I give them credit for that. So, they've told their donors, they've told their ticket holders, this is what it will take starting in what, 27, 28. I think I've got the year correct there. But yeah, that is one way to generate more revenue.
And that kind of you talked about donor fatigue, and we're talking about, the season tickets and the seat licenses now. I mean, I remember going back to, there was an article in The Athletic, I think 2 years ago, talking to a Georgia donor, Georgia football, and how successful they've been. And there's even donor fatigue there. It is as good as Georgia football has been. You're getting your money's worth for the most part. I mean, where does the money continue to come from? Because we've talked about, I mean, you mentioned the back pay that is part of this house settlement. We got the revenue sharing. Now there's going to be, NIL deals with local businesses who I'm sure are already some of them are donors as well. Where does all the money, scholarship endowments, where does it come from?
Preston, God forbid for the entire industry that the media bubble pop. Because if those TV contracts don't continue to escalate, oh boy, then it gets real in a hurry. And that's why, and Greg Sankey doesn't want to hear this, and Tony Petitti doesn't want to hear this. But for the good of the whole, it would be so much better if somehow the top echelon of major college football could go do its own thing, could collectively sell its media rights to multiple partners, share in that revenue. You want to be like the NFL? Go really be like the NFL. And Virginia and Virginia Tech and most ACC schools, I think they'd sign up for that. And then let every other sport, including the two basketballs, let them return to some semblance of geographic sanity in their conferences, while football essentially establishes an NFL-like model. You'll have divisions, you'll have division champions, you'll have playoff wild cards. No more, no offense to Carla Williams, no more CFB selection committee. I don't mean to put her out of her side hustle there, but to me it's so appealing. But are the Big Ten and the SEC going to give away their inherent advantages? And I think the answer is we all believe, not no, but hell no.
That's a very Southern hell no too. Yeah, and that's been the what I think a lot of people outside of maybe those conferences have been hoping for, because I think it makes the most sense for the
It
long-term
does.
viability of college sports.
It 100% does.
No more, trips to Cal and Stanford, and it get back to those regional rivalries. I mean, we're talking about the season tickets and seat licenses. Those are a little less appealing now than they used to be, because the matchups that you're going to be paying for are not the same. You're not getting a guaranteed Duke or North Carolina coming to John Paul Jones Arena every year. You're getting, Clemson's not even on the schedule as of right now.
Right.
You've got Cal coming. No one wants to put up all that money to see Cal. That's just the facts. So it's watered down college athletics a lot, just kind of all this movement and everything. So I think that model would be the would make the most sense, but obviously money's going to stand in the way of that ever maybe happening.
Most likely.
Anything else kind of on your mind? One last thing. The
Sure.
impact on the future of non-revenue sports. I think has been a big topic when you're talking about, putting so much money in these other ones. And we've talked about scholarship endowments for these other sports so that they have a little bit more sustainability on their own. Is that, I guess, the best way to kind of go forward with those sports?
I think in Virginia it is, because there is that culture, that endowment mindset at Virginia, on the athletic side of the house, and especially on the academic side of the house. And God bless those donors for having that philanthropic heart and wanting to do that. Other schools aren't as fortunate. They're not as established. Their alumni aren't as established. And frankly, their alumni aren't as successful and as wealthy as a lot of UVAs are. So I think in that regard, the institution is playing to its strengths. And likewise, Stanford, North Carolina, those are schools in the ACC that you see making some. When I wrote about the Tennis Endowment Project, I went on Stanford's website, and they literally had dozens and dozens of athletic department staff positions that are endowed. I
Wow.
mean, we're not talking just the AD and the
Yeah.
head coaches. We're talking about staffers.
A whole bunch of other names to learn when you do their official titles that we in the media don't always really adhere by.
Correct.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I know there's been a lot of talk about do sports start to get kind of cut in the future, and that's something that's a reality. I mean, we've already seen it at UVA with the diving program that got announced right after UVA got knocked out of the ACC basketball
ACC basketball term.
tournament. Was not the press release we were expecting. But
No, but we got that press release a couple hours later.
yeah, it was a busy day for the UVA information department. But yeah, it's interesting just to see what's the future of some of these other sports around UVA? I didn't realize some of these SEC schools have so few sports. Like, Virginia's got what I can't remember the exact number right now, 28, 30,
High 20s.
high 20s. And you're looking at some SEC schools that are like 13. So it's a little bit less to distribute, I guess.
Oh, it's much. I think the Division 1A minimum is 16.
Okay.
I think I'm right there. But yes, you don't see, for example, you don't see SEC schools playing men's lacrosse.
Or
And
soccer, yeah.
right, exactly. Those are the two
Yeah.
glaring omissions at those schools.
Yeah, really interesting stuff, David. Thank you for coming on and talking a little bit about this. I think we all have a slightly better understanding of the house settlement. I'm sure
No,
something.
I'm sure I made people's eyeballs bleed. It's just it can be really dense. And
It
sometimes
is.
I get off on tangents. I try to explain it to friends, and like my buddy who's a businessman is going, "Explain this to me." And
It's I'm still I've read upwards of 30 plus articles just in the last 2 weeks alone, along with everything else before that, and I'm still learning something new every day. But David, thanks for coming on and talking about this here on the Who's On podcast.
sure. Thanks for having me, Preston. Be well.
All right, that'll do it for us this week here on the Who's On podcast. We will be back next week getting into a little bit of men's basketball, so stay tuned for that.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.